My name is Alyssa Kirchhoff, and I am guest hosting this week's episode of Inside Ag. I have asked Marcy Penner of the Kansas Sampler Foundation to join us. I first heard Marcy speak at this winter's Hansen Foundation Forum. Marcy captivated both myself and every other person in the audience with her enthusiasm for Kansas's rural communities and her heart for the people who inhabit them. Since then, I have followed along as she has begun her third journey through every incorporated Kansas community as she has asked, "Does this town like themselves?" I am so excited to have this conversation today and can't wait for you to listen. Marcy, thank you for joining us. We are so glad that you are here.
Glad to be with you.
Thank you. So to start us off today, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you landed at the Kansas Sampler Foundation?
Yes, I'll do it backwards. The way I landed at the foundation is that my dad and I started it 30 years ago. I had moved home from Philadelphia, where I had been an elementary guidance counselor. And dad and I started driving around the state doing our first guidebook. And as we did that, we noticed two things. One was that Kansans didn't know their own state very well. And the other thing was that if one town was doing something really great, there wasn't a good way to share that with other small towns. So we formed our nonprofit to address both of those issues. So that's how I got involved with the Kansas Sampler Foundation.
That's wonderful. I did not know you founded it. So that is very neat. In those conversations with your dad about getting started, I'm guessing maybe you traveled Kansas as a child, and that what kind of led to that goal?
Yeah. We were always a family where mom and dad would put us in the car and would just take some time to kind of go what we would now call exploring. And They both were really hard workers, and it was just a way for the family to enjoy some time together, but we'd go to places that were maybe off the beaten path a little bit. I remember having a picnic in a quarry one day because dad said, "Today we're just going east as far as we can go on the same road in one direction." And so I loved that. But when we traveled together to do our guidebook, I asked him every question under the sun about what we were seeing, from crops to about telephone lines to fencing. And that was a really good education for me.
Can you remind us what year that first guidebook was written?
Yeah, it was 1990. So It was called Kansas Weekend Guide. And since then, dad and I did two more. And then I did Eight Wonders of Kansas guidebook, and now two guidebooks called Kansas Guidebook for Explorers. And one thing we believe in is going to every town in the state to, firsthand see what they have, not just depend on a brochure or someone telling us. Even in your town of Stuttgart, there's this, it was an old garage, mechanic shop maybe. And, just, it's kind of iconic, I would say, for the town. Uh-huh. And I think we put that in there. So, and we learned so much going to every town. So that's why we did it for both sides of our work, to find out what to share with Kansans, but also to find out how towns were doing and kind of gather the common issues and then the efforts and resources that we could share maybe with others. And we just sort of followed our noses for the work.
I love that sense of adventure and just see what we have to offer. Because Kansas truly does. We have wonderful gyms. We're not always thought of as a tourism state, but if you go out looking, you will find something wonderful.
Especially if you have the explore spirit, because it's those little things that add together to make up a really fun trip or adventure. So that's kind of what we focused on.
So through those journeys and across this time span, what has surprised you about Kansas?
Well, two sides of it for me. The explorer side is that there's so many little things that are exciting and so many cafes that have really great food. But the other thing that I really noticed is that you can't give a description of what a town is about just by driving down the main street. There's so much more to these towns that you can't see from just that first impression of driving downtown. You can't see what really you can't see what's going on in people's hearts and minds for their community. And so we learned to dig deeper, to ask locals questions. And that really was an important thing to figure out and to continue to do.
When you go to these communities, do you give them a heads up or do you just show up?
We just show up. And the reason is because a couple of times we told towns we were coming and they got a little bit too dressed up for us.
Okay.
You know, they scheduled things. And I really love the random, spontaneous discussions with the post office clerk or the guys sitting on the bench in front of the barber shop or going to the mechanic and asking him questions. And also, you don't know how much time you're going to spend in a town. You get into discussions you had never planned to get into, or you're in someone's pickup being shown something in a pasture. And you really don't want to say no to those opportunities. So we found out it's just better to not schedule, and it's great. I love doing it that way.
I think that is just that the whole concept is fascinating. And I love that you do this and you get to the heart of Kansas people. So we are not following my outline at all because I'm just fascinated. But when you come to these communities, and we'll talk about this a little bit with your Power Up and Go report, but how do you find the doers? So how do you ask the questions to find out what's going on and what that heart is?
You know, you start somewhere, and if you know that it's going to be a dead end, you quickly end that conversation politely. I mean, they don't know you're being strategic, but, you know, then you just ask questions about how does the town get things done? Or, you know, you learn a certain set of questions that can lead you to what you're looking for. One of the best questions that we've asked is if a town is lucky enough to have a grocery store, we'll go to the store and we'll ask the clerk, whether it's the owner, the clerk, the part-time person, whoever's at the counter, we'll say, does your town support you? And if the answer is negative, like they'll just go off and talk bad about townspeople, or they'll say, oh my gosh, this town is so supportive. And they'll go on and on about just how great the town has been for the store. And that one question will lead us down different paths. In fact, you know, if they say yes, it's probably a town that likes itself. So, but you know, the doers, they'll turn up in conversation. People know who the ones are getting things done. And those are the people we want to talk to. We don't care what their position is. We don't care if you're, you know, even have a title. If you're a doer, we want to know you.
Oh, we're so fortunate in these communities to have those doers. They are the lifeblood that keep us going on. So I'm just so glad you get to have those conversations, and I can't wait to hear more about them. So you are currently visiting every incorporated Kansas community. Can you tell us a little bit about where you've been recently and what you've seen and what really inspired you?
The reason we're doing this trip to every town is because we've brought on a co-director. As I get older, which happens to everyone, we think about how to keep the Kansas Sampler Foundation going for a long time, decades to come. So we brought on a co-director, and we just decided the best way to really help her know how our work happens is to take her to every town. And so it's been really, really fun watching co-director Sarah Green have this experience. And, you know, so we leave a town and we talk about what she saw, what she learned. But we're doing the first two times we went around the state, it was to research for guidebooks. But you also learn about a town, even though you're researching for a guidebook. But this time, the main purpose was to find out what is going great in these towns, where the barriers are, and who the doers are. Is it a town that values young people? And is it a town that likes itself? And so those are the question categories that we're asking. And sometimes, you know, you start from a different direction depending on who you're talking to. But those are the main things we're looking for. And we hope to then share that information with state agencies, organizations, anybody who's interested in knowing how to advocate or support sustaining rural communities. And it will also drive the programs that we do in future years.
So, and you've mentioned this and I mentioned this, but we've mentioned several times, does a town like itself? So on the Kansas Samplers Facebook page, you or one of your coworkers had written something that really inspired me. And it said, quote, "Does a town like itself? Cohesion isn't a forever thing. It depends on the voices heard, the openness of the leaders, the willingness of the doers, and the desire to move a town forward," end quote. I read that and was shaking my head saying, yes, like this is absolutely what we need and what we want and what our hope for all of Kansas. So I'm guessing you've been to a couple communities that feel this way already. So can you tell us what that kind of Main Street feels like in Kansas?
If you don't mind, I'd like to preamble that a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So for the Kansas Power Up and Go report, I interviewed 175 young people under 40 from rural. And it was very clear through their words that their decision to stay in a town or to determine their happiness depended largely if a town liked itself. So I was so moved. They didn't always use that phrase, but I was so moved by that, that it became something that we wanted to look for, you know, and concentrate on. You can start to feel it with the first person you talk to in a town. It takes almost seconds before they start gushing about a town. If it is a town that likes itself, it's just that those things that create a sense of community rise to the top in the conversation. I mean, who doesn't want to live in a town where people are for each other and pulling for each other and supporting each other? And, you know, they aren't jealous if a certain business is doing really well and the owner might buy a new car, which is a sticking point for many. You're shaking your head. You understand that. In some towns, they would be happy for that owner, you know, and young people, and I'm sure people of every age, they prefer a town or belonging to an organization that feels good about itself. And that really speaks to leadership, to inclusion of all ages and all types of people. And it tells you a lot. And you learn that very quickly with these questions. It's sometimes hard to see visually. We were in a town the other day that the downtown didn't look all that great, but they had a really good restaurant. And the manager came over and was checking on us, and we asked some questions. And one of the questions was, what do we need to know about this town that we can't see by driving downtown? And she just opened up about all the dreams that people have for this town. And, you know, if we hadn't asked that question, we would not have been able to see that by just driving downtown. And in every case, you know, I will always fight for a town, regardless of the size, if they have gumption and desire for their town to make it. If they're a town that's just always beating each other up and they don't care about their town, well, we can't spend our energy on every town. But if it's even a town of 20 people that's really working hard to make their town better, we'll be there till the end for them. And, you know, people come and go. So that's an ebb and flow thing about cohesion. It depends on the present set of people that are there.
So you said that about cohesion. So can a town learn to re-like itself?
Ah, that is an awesome question. I am so glad you asked that. And I think I'm going to keep that in my mind as we go to all these towns. I think they can to some extent. And we know that because if there's some disaster, people will come together almost always. So how can we translate that into more everyday work? And I think people have this innate desire to help each other and, you know, to be productive in a community, to be part of community. Alyssa, let's get back together in a year. Well, our journey might take 4 years, but next time I see you, let's see if we've learned anything about how to answer that.
I'm going to pay attention to that too here, because I think there's always aspects we don't love about ourselves or our communities, and there's got to be a way to learn to like even the things that are a little sticky. So
we're a little different, you know, and yes. Sometimes we're just nervous or scared if someone looks different or they come from a different country. And I think there are ways that we can use to get to know each other in a non-threatening way that will just change how we welcome people. That was the other thing in the that I heard from young people, was that it was very important to them or noticeable if they were welcomed to a town. And if, let's say, the spouse was from that town, it was also very important for the spouse who wasn't from that town to feel like they could quickly become part of things. And I heard many stories of how that was not the case. You know, so there's two sides to that story. And I think just awareness will help us do things better in a community about welcoming everyone. You don't have to be there 40 years before you can say that you're an insider or that your opinions are welcomed.
So you've mentioned your Power Up and Go report, and we've talked about it briefly. Why did you want to pursue this? We know that young people are the future, but we don't always act on that. So what led you to send out these surveys, to ask these questions, to follow up?
Well, first of all, thank you, because all we were doing was really reflecting what we heard. And I also want to give credit to Sarah Green, who's now our co-director, because she did a great job taking my scratchings and thoughts and turning them into just a wonderful report. The Office of Rural Prosperity, I think they asked if we would do a report on how to recruit and retain young people in rural. So I first sent out a survey and got like 500 responses from people in every county, but it became clear to me that I needed to interview people. And so this was during COVID. So I did 30-minute Zooms with 175 young people. And I have to say, it was probably one of the top highlights of my professional career. It was just exhilarating. It was just so awesome. And, you know, sometimes it wasn't just all good things. Sometimes it was things that are rough, you know, what the issues are. But what really came through was that young people, if they feel welcomed, if they're given a place in the community to make a difference, they will give their all to helping this community move forward. It was just really eye-opening, and the information in the report is being used by the Office of Rural Prosperity to shape some of their programs.
So I was curious about the timing on the report. Like, obviously, none of us planned for COVID and the impacts that would have on our daily lives and how we meet with other individuals. Do you think if you did the report, say you did the report 3 years before or now 3 years after, do you think those answers would be different, or what were your hypothesis about that?
You ask great questions. I must compliment you on that.
Thank you.
You know, I think I would have tried to go meet with each person. And the way that would have been a mistake is that I couldn't have done 175. You know, it was the start of COVID, really. So I'm not sure COVID shaped a lot of the answers at that point. We just hired a Power Up coordinator, manager, and she's probably going to do interviews again. So it will be interesting, you know, with COVID not being a factor at all, what kind of responses she'll get. But it'll also be interesting just how the answers have evolved. Mm-hmm. Is there just a new set of young people saying the same things? I have a feeling they're still going to want to be welcomed. They will still value diversity of thought and diversity of people. And I just think they're always going to want to feel like they have a voice and that they can make a difference. And I wonder if you feel that way too.
I do. I'm a relatively new transplant to our community. I'm from a larger community and moved here following veterinary school. And we moved here without kids and young in our professional life. And that you just want to feel welcome and you want to feel like you will have a place here and that your voice is important. Exactly what you said. And I think that's what we want for everyone else too. It's just for them to feel included and valued. And
my theory is that if young people feel valued, that it will impact every other age in the community. You know, because if you're valued, you'll do things that probably support the older folks in town as well. But it's really easy for young people to become invisible. And if there's a really strong hierarchy of leadership, it is really difficult for young people to break into that and be able to have their voice heard. So
in your report, you identified four areas of insight. And I think some of these areas are where young people become invisible if there are roadblocks in those spaces. So you put broadband and housing aside. We all know those are tremendous issues that don't necessarily reflect. But then you highlighted governmental connections, childcare, recruitment and retention of youth already in the community. So you specified youth K through 12, and then business development. So can you tell us some of your findings in those four areas and what the pulse was for young people and what they want and what they have and what they hope for?
Let's start with childcare. Huge issue. I mean, why would a young family move to a town if there's no way to take care of their kids? I mean, these days, most parents are working and it shows the value of the community as well. There's so many stories about how, you know, young people choose when to have a kid because of childcare openings or if they will have a kid or not. Let's say you want to start a business. The most important thing is that the leaders are open-minded to a new business coming in. It's hard to find sometimes the support of how to become an entrepreneur. And I think there's lots of agencies now around the state that are doing a really good job of supporting that, but you have to know about it. You have to know that where you can reach out. And so just making those connections is important. The one about state government, and it seems like in this last year or two, there have been so many grant opportunities from the state, but the issue is capacity. How does a small town take advantage of those opportunities? Sometimes it's just who can write the grant. And then it's, do we have contractors to do the work in the area? And then who will keep track of the grant and do the final report? And it's not that people aren't qualified to do that, but a lot of times those people have jobs. So just to throw out a stat, 75% of the incorporated cities in Kansas are volunteer led, meaning no one is paid to think about how to sustain the town and to do the work. So we proposed something called Rural Champions, who would get paid for a year or so from the state to like maybe be in charge of creating a childcare center in a town. And then once it was built, that job would go away, but a local person would be paid because right now it's usually on the backs of volunteers and they either have another job or they're not qualified, though willing. That's a really tough issue, how to take advantage of all the opportunities. And the fourth one is one I'm excited about. You know, when you look at how to retain kids or recruit young people, the best audience is our K through 12. And what messages are we giving them during their school years in our community? Are we saying, you know, we want you to get out of here when you graduate? There's nothing for you here. Or are we showing them how to be an entrepreneur now, like Network Kansas and Next Gen for Youth are doing? You know, we can do a lot right now with the kids in school to help them love their community. And there's lots of ideas for that that we've come across, but you can never start messaging too soon. And it can't be disingenuous messaging. It's almost also you show them what community is all about because they'll feel that. It's not just words. It's help them see that this is a community that likes itself. And more than likely, at some point, they will consider coming back for a job or to raise kids. So I think we addressed all four of those.
We did. You know. Yeah. And I love that reminder about our youth, because that for parents of children those ages, it's such a busy time of life. And you're thinking about preparing them to succeed wherever they go. And I think sometimes it's a challenge to talk about where you live in a really positive way, and to encourage them to see those positives and know that they can go, but we would absolutely love for them to come back. And you can bring new ideas in and new ways of living in, and those will be received. And that kind of leads into my next point. Within the report, you're quoted in saying the success of businesses is critical to keeping the community thriving. Perhaps the greatest of these ingredients is the openness to new ideas. New ideas, I don't always see that being accepted in the community I live in. So what, as you've traveled and visited with others, how do communities get comfortable with uncomfortable change and new ideas?
Another great question. You know, the two examples that come to mind, two different towns, the mayor, we were told that the mayor, if given an idea, you know, if someone wanted to share an idea with him or her, the mayor's response would be, "Hey, that sounds great. How can I help?" And just imagine what that would feel like if all of the older folks in town who are leaders or city council, if they said, "Tell us more. We want to help you do that. How can we help?" I mean, that kind of blows my mind that might be a strategy or a mindset that a town might have. And even if they don't know how to help you, you can tell that their intention is there. And the part about being uncomfortable, I think that's also a mindset, and it sort of comes from leaders. Is such a weird word for a small town. In many ways, it's really the doers that are the leaders. So it's really how the community handles those situations that are uncomfortable, or how they talk about a bond issue. You know, are they able to sit down and not just make it personal, but are they able to sit down and say, "Let's look at this bond issue. Let's talk both sides. Let's talk about how this will impact the future." The towns that have those in charge that can lead people through those discussions, those towns are going to be better off. And sometimes it's easier in smaller towns. It's either smaller or harder. You know, if one attitude is already entrenched, it's going to be harder. But I know many small towns where, you know, it's pretty easy to decide, "Hey, this Friday, let's do something on Main Street," and you can pull it off in a few days. That's what we heard in one of the first small towns we went to. So those are questions, Alyssa, that you just asked that maybe we'll look for answers as we go on our journey.
Oh, you and me both. I love how you pointed out those conversations surrounding tremendous conflicts, whether that be like a bond issue or a school redistricting or a school closing. Those are conversations we shy away from. We don't want to have. We're made incredibly uncomfortable by them. But when a community comes together and has those tough conversations, whether it just be around a board table or a community forum, that's where you see those individuals who are so proud of the community and who will go to great lengths, giving of their time, essentially they're not making a wage while they're volunteering. And it's just, I wish we looked at more of those hard conversations as opportunities and shied away from them less.
I think, Alyssa, that's so good. It's kind of how we reframe the difficulties. And if your leaders are good at helping reframe into a constructive, you know, it doesn't have to be all Pollyanna nicey nice, but it needs to be constructive. You have to get to the constructive part of the conversation. Otherwise, it will just tear your town apart. And that's pretty easy to do too.
So I pulled a lot of quotes out of this because the writing is phenomenal. But one of these I wrote down on a note card and put in front of my computer at work, because it stuck out, and it's something that kind of galvanized one against the rough days. But you said that one can live rural and change the world from here. So not only do I think we need a note card, but I really would love to see that driving into town every day, because we need that reminder, and that reminder that even though we are small and a very small percentage of the voter population, we mean something and we're important, and we can change the entire world. So what drove you to say those words?
Well, my interviewees, you know, they convinced me that that's why a lot of them moved to small towns. They wanted to change the world through their town. I love that you picked that quote out. It's such an affirmation, and maybe it needs to go on a t-shirt or the entrance into town, which that would be pretty awesome. But I think we forget sometime that, you know, especially when you're younger, that's a goal for many people, to make a difference, to change things, and to see that a rural community is where the opportunity is to do that is just so exciting. And those of us who live there around that person need to support them with all we have. When you think about it, it's really easy to support someone's dream. Sometimes all you have to do is listen and say, I believe you can do that. And it's also really easy to dash their dreams. So you choose, you know, you choose which end of the spectrum you want to be as a community member. And just know that there's a lot of people, this, regardless of their age, that have dreams.
That's fantastic. To make that active choice every day is, how are we going to look at our opportunities going forward? So we should all do that. We just remind ourselves as we walk out. So to summarize your report, so you described communities of the future in Kansas as communities who like themselves, listen, engage, and believe and invest themselves. So then you describe leaders as those who ask how they can help, seek to understand, and cultivate civic leadership. Do you envision a Kansas full of inclusive, vibrant communities? So we've kind of interspersed some action steps along the way in our conversation, but do you have some steps that you want every rural Kansan to take to try to help their community like themselves better?
I think the first one is what we just talked about. Decide what you, each person listening, what you can do to support businesses, dreams, efforts. And I really would say the other one is to pay attention to your under 40s. We call power-ups 21 to 39s who are rural by choice. And to me, those last three words are so incredibly powerful, because it means they are choosing to live where they do. And my action step is to look around and find those people and ask them how they're doing. Are they happy? You know, what could we do to help you love living in this town? Because the answer they give will probably be the answers for others as well. And I want to make sure that people don't hear me saying that is the only age group that's important. I could do a whole nother thing on elder care and how we treat, value, and take care of our elderly as well. We've talked about K through 12. So I think it's the 40, 50, 60, even 70 age people that are the ones that can alter the course of a community by how they support those other ages. And it will come back to you. You know, if you become a supporter, you'll feel it. It'll come back to you.
Oh, it just inspires me to go out and look at our community in different lights. And it's just, I hope everybody listened to this and just is excited about the future and what is to come and what great things we have going. That's kind of the end of my formal questions. I have one other thing I want to ask you before we wrap up, but do you have anything else that you'd like to talk about or add?
I just want to say that this doesn't mean there aren't issues in rural. It just means, how do we handle them? And so to me, it's all mindset, largely mindset in rural. And I don't really have anything else, Alyssa. You've done a great job leading me to share some of the things that I learned from all these young people on the interviews and since then that I've met.
Oh, I cannot wait to read what comes next. So my very last thing, this can be completely outside of your realm of work or expertise, but do you have one challenge that you would like to extend to our listeners? So one thing that you want them to think about or do or think about differently?
Well, I would just say to look at rural as an opportunity. You know, we get bashed in so many ways, national media, even local media, but to me, there's so much opportunity for living a good life, for having fun visiting, exploring rural Kansas, for having a good business. There's so many businesses that are needed in rural. Let's just all get together and figure out what we can do to move rural forward, and it will help make Kansas a more awesome state.
Oh, that's wonderful. I think we're preaching to the right choir. I think our listeners are the ones who can get this done. But Marcy, I know you have lots to do today, and I am so thankful that you took the time to visit. And I think we could talk for a lot longer. So if you want to come visit, you're more than welcome. I can fill your whole day.
Alyssa, I'm sure we will stop to see you.
Oh, I look forward to it. And I look forward to showing you what we have. But Kansas is so much better because of people like you. And I really just can't wait to see what you do next. So thank you again, and have a great day.
Thank you very much.